Whoa, we started with a laugh. That was impressive. All right. We made another week. It's Process That Podcast.
Good to see you, buddy.
I know the topic today is why are things only obvious after they're obvious?
Let me sit with that for a minute. Why are they only obvious after they're obvious?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're probably thinking of a pet rock and how brilliant that is.
It was obvious. It was going to be a huge thing. Like, what is that? Recency bias?
Confirmation bias.
Take recency bias and confirmation bias. And if they had a baby, it would be so obvious.
Obvious. There's probably something besides pet rock, though. Tell me where you're
going. Yeah, so here's where I was coming from. So I was working at an e-commerce company in Boise, Idaho, and we would ship stuff from the wrong place.
Right.
And we would ship something, and I probably told the story again or in the past, but I want to zero in on, one, this story, but then also just why stuff's obvious. So
this was physical goods, right?
Yeah. So physical goods, we would order something like on the West Coast. And if the West Coast distribution center didn't have one of the items, it would ship from the East Coast or from Florida or something.
Yeah.
And we would call that a ship from wrong. And so what we did is we'd basically have the ship from wrong. And we found that basically our number one product was always on these ship from wrongs. And people just kept asking, why in the world are we out of Optimum protein?
Yeah.
Chocolate protein. That's a number one seller. We're never out of that.
As most of our listeners would have guessed.
Yeah. I mean,
number one product. Yeah.
Number one product at bodybuilding.com. Optimum chocolate whey. You can find it now at Amazon.
Right.
Which is a different story for a different day.
Right here.
Yeah. So what I did was I was like, why is it shipping from the wrong distribution center? It'd be basically because you'd be get some bespoke pill. That was only covered in this case, in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And so because they bought the chocolate protein and the bespoke pill that only lived in Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania was the only one that had the bespoke pill.
Yeah.
That's why that shipped from the wrong location, was the bespoke pill.
Okay.
Right. So I spent quite a bit of time explaining this. I'm like, this is what I need. I need the data of like the thing when it tried to fulfill an order, the thing that it couldn't fill in the original warehouse, but it could fill in the shipping warehouse. I want that, and we'll call it a ship from wrong.
Yeah.
Because that was the item that forced us to ship from wrong.
Yeah.
And so I deliver this report, and literally, like, probably to this day, that report is still used if they have two warehouses still.
Yeah.
And it was so obvious after the fact.
Just to break that and ask, is this really the most logical approach?
Yeah.
It
was a logic thing, but it was like, oh yeah, that's the data we need.
Yeah.
And so after the fact, it just became like everybody used it. Everybody used this thing. Everybody in operations used it.
Chris, what Herculean effort did you go through to get people to appreciate the value of the stop shipping stuff from the wrong coast report?
It was super simple. Like it probably took me more time to explain to the data warehouse team when I was trying to do.
Yeah.
And then it was a brief explanation of, hey, because I had to explain like, this seems wrong. Like this data doesn't make sense. And I'm like, no, this is your causal problem. That this is what caused the problem because you didn't have this SKU in the, you know, the closer shipping location. And then once they made that connection of like, oh, I've been wanting this data for 12 years or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
There was, I could just walk away. Never touch the thing ever again.
It's incredible to think about. Cause to your initial question of, you know, once it's obvious, why is it so obvious? I've done a lot of organizational change management. We've talked about that all the time.
Yeah.
And so oftentimes we're trying to convince people that a new way of working that is not intuitive, it's wildly unfamiliar, we're demanding them to completely change everything about how they spend their workday.
Sure.
But this is a better thing. Like that's what's bred this huge volume of work, just trying to communicate all of the changes and then trying to get people to appreciate the value of it. versus something that's super intuitive. People see the problem once you point it out and they're like, well, that's a horrible idea. We shouldn't do that. Yep. So talk to me more about what is it that makes the obvious so obvious once it's shared with us?
I think people have to see stuff. I think people have to see it. And I think it's going to always be that way, where they have to see the outcome. And the other thing, the counter to that is that people don't like to change, because most of the time change is just not actually helpful.
Well, no, it's iterations a lot of time.
It's more to do.
Yeah.
It's more to do without a reason why they should do it.
Yeah.
Or a reason that actually helps someone else's life, but not yours.
Yeah. Very true. Well, and most of us are on a measure of autopilot. If we've been, whatever our regimen is, whatever our routine, it may not be a consistent ritual, but we step through a lot of the portions without having to really engage our frontal lobes, that executive function, and change demands it all of a sudden of us.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's like the magic of really good process. I mean, we talk about process a lot, but really good process, it just makes sense. Right. So which is interesting, right? So like if you think of like companies like Instagram, right? Started out as a bourbon sharing app to share pictures of bourbon. It was obvious, not to even to the founders or the makers of this thing, but it was obvious to the users. And what was obvious was discovered by their users, not necessarily by the creators. Now the creators shifted and called it Instagram and sold to Meta, and
for $8
are probably on their yachts right now. But like, if you think about like sometimes that, like even, you know, Slack, another one, like literally like the company was doing something else. They're like, hey, we like this a lot. This is actually really helpful. Let's see if this is a product. And now all of a sudden it's huge.
Yeah.
Versus like Microsoft Teams, which literally was horrid, and then COVID happened and it had to become a thing. But if you remember Teams before COVID, it was struggle bus central.
I in all fairness, it doesn't feel so different post COVID as it did pre. In part because they don't do a lot to make their navigation more intuitive.
Well, I mean, think about the Microsoft suite of tools, SharePoint, which is hard to share and it's hard to know the point.
100%.
Compared to Google.
Yeah.
Where Google just like, it's their Google. It's always been collaborative. Mm-hmm. Like I ran into something with, I think it was on a SharePoint site where like I had a conflict between, and this is like, we're not talking like 10 years ago. We're talking like this morning. I see what a spreadsheet and he's like, I don't get the spreadsheet. I'm like, can you just pull up so that I can kind of see? I'm like, it didn't save my edits. Like it had this old thing. And then it's like, I've got a conflict over here. And I'm like, I don't care about your conflict. So then the solution is save the file.
Yeah.
Right. And then re-upload it or do whatever, and then share it again.
And that's
great. That's fine. If you're, you know, if you're not connected to dial up, like if you're offline, that's fine. And some of this is like just the architectural beginnings of these, where Google has always been forward looking in having a collaborative system.
Yeah.
Whereas Microsoft is coming off of CDs that it used to send to people to install. It was a 12 disc install for Windows 95.
For a lot of us that hit the workforce last century and remember all that. Like, I think you touch on something super interesting, and I think just the Microsoft versus Google experience and how we navigate, you know, one of these was designed to just be additive, echoing a very different era of software development.
Yep.
And it was all physical collateral based. They had to be able to put it on disks and ship it. And that had to ride, you know, for some indefinite period of time. So they had to spend a time bombing it to make sure that it wasn't going to blow up once they shipped and destroy your next quarter's earnings, versus cloud-based, where you can find a bug in the morning and then push through a fix late that day, and it affects all of the users that were already getting pissed off. And so Yeah, modern tools by design should be far more frictionless, simply because of the speed of being able to do that. Ironically, they're not always more simple.
Yeah.
Right.
What's interesting about just this whole thing is that Google, right, in their Google Sheets application, was obvious.
Yeah.
Because of all of the work that Excel did.
Yeah.
In order to make it the standard. But it was not as useful, therefore not as obvious, and therefore more like just harder to manage.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting, like how some of these things, like just they're just the interaction's kind of interesting, where it's like, look, if Google came out with a sheet before, like, I don't know how it worked. We needed spreadsheets bad, which is why they went and created Lotus Notes and all the other.
That's right.
Thing.
You're thinking if Lotus Notes had a baby with Salesforce, then we would have had.
I mean, you know, that's actually really interesting. Like what would have happened if Lotus Notes would have been bought by Salesforce?
Yeah.
Whose motto was don't install a darn thing.
That's right. Yep. Be done with that whole server environment. Well, so
yeah,
we talk a lot about process debt, and a lot of it is, I think, based on today's conversation, we're kind of gazing, you know, into the dark hole of just bad process design. Nobody understands why we're doing it this way. It's not intuitive. It's super stiff. So, you know, how do we start to design processes, or how do we start to curate processes inside of our organizations that are more intuitive?
Yeah.
You know, about how people can start to make the obvious more obvious to their
the number one thing that I would do, because where I see a lot of process debt is around reporting.
Mm.
Maybe just because of where I sit, but I think determining if it's a infinity project, like people are always going to do quarterly business reviews.
There's no debt to be done. Is that what you mean?
Correct. Well, or it's just, it's consistent.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be the same.
Okay.
The change, but it should be a slowly moving change, or a daily metric report.
Mm-hmm.
Those are consistent over time versus one-off analysis with prediction.
Yeah.
I think we convolute those too much.
Yeah.
And so what happens is you're like, hey, I need you to go do this one-off thing. Right. And you're like, okay, well it's one-off. So it's, I'm gonna keep it really simple. And what's not obvious is that one-off report is now used in perpetuity.
Yeah. It's gospel, regardless of how.
Well,
that reporting's a good area. What about, one of the recurring conversations that I seem to have at least a couple of times a month, if not weekly, is I send it to you in the blank. I put it to you in Slack. But why did you look in email? Well, I looked in email. Oh, but I put it on SharePoint. We play a little bit of hide and go seek. And I've never experienced an organization that has come to a way of making the communication medium obvious. Have you seen examples of that where it's like, if we only do it this way, then everybody intuitively knows where to expect to find it?
I think it's, I haven't.
Damn it.
I know.
And we're getting still close. I thought, here's the time to strengthen it. All right, we'll wrestle
that. What's interesting is it is you run into issues where you run into people's skill set.
Yeah.
Right? So you run into someone who doesn't know Excel.
Yeah.
And so they do the thing in Word.
Yeah.
Right? Or you have SaaS tools all over the place.
Yeah.
And there's no clear owner. And so it just ends up in SharePoint or OneDrive. And so I think we actually do a lot better when we have really hard constraints, but I don't think many companies want those hard constraints.
Mm.
Because it means that they have to clean up stuff, and cleaning up is a lot harder than saying, let's go buy a new tool.
Sure. Well said. Yeah, I agree. The proliferation. Well, we talked in a previous episode about a past coworker who had really clean boundaries.
Yeah.
And so you knew exactly how to interact with this person and their work product.
Yeah.
That sounds very similar. If we said, you know, we're going to always put updates into one place. This is where you'll find them. This is where that information's in.
Yeah. You were, you know, before we got on, you were telling me about an implementation that you were doing, and you were showing people how to use the tool.
Yeah.
And they were just shocked. And I think that that's what's funny is, like, we don't like training, but we want to get better, but we don't like training and we want to get better. And no one has the authority to push the change.
Gee.
And so it ends up in this, like, kind of weird cycle where it's, unless you can kind of get the snowball rolling, it's really hard, because generally you're dealing with whoever the weakest link is on the tool.
Yeah. Yeah, fundamentally, we need others-oriented process owners with absolute authority. I mean, we'd laughed in another, you know, prior to getting on air session, just about a dictatorship is really easy because everybody knows exactly what's expected of them.
Yeah.
And absent high trust, it's high known consequence, which looks a lot like high trust, maybe. But the ambiguity is completely extracted in that world.
Yeah. Right?
The my way or the highway. So in our efforts to be more human, we also make all these social creatures crazy by trying to give them a little bit of decision rights. So
100%. So what do we do about this today? I would say, be curious, figure out what happens between the silos.
Mm-hmm.
I think efficiency is oftentimes hidden between the silos, as people don't know what's going on. I think that's really important. And if you find something that's obvious and you know it's obvious, just be prepared for a long slog to make it obvious.
Chris, finish that thought. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm just thinking, like, because I've done this quite a few times in my career. I feel like I do this a lot, actually. I feel like this might be my superpower.
Yeah.
But it, like, people just don't get it, and then you show it to them, and then they never talk to you ever again, and they use it every day. It's the weirdest thing. They're like, I don't get it. I'm not really tracking what you're doing over there. It's like, okay, all right, I'll keep asking and beg, borrowing and stealing. Because I've had it a couple times where it's like, it all tends to be in the data space, but
sure,
the last time that this happened, like, I started pulling this data set and then had an issue, and the data set was, like, just clear as could be, like, what my issue was.
Yeah.
And so then I showed some people, who are like, oh my gosh, this is great. And then all of a sudden I got a dashboard, like, the next week. And so, like, it was only obvious when you could show the use case.
Chris, I love that. And I was going to touch on the value of use case. Oftentimes that point of be curious doesn't mean I have to be the problem solver. You know, in my experience, somebody else already has an intimate knowledge of the problem. Yep. And to them, it's so obvious, but for any of a host of reasons, they're not being heard.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
So sometimes your job is just to support or to champion their point of view.
Yeah.
Right. And escalate that, make it more visible so that everybody else sees the use case. So.
Yeah, I would also say, like, if you're a manager and you want to actually tackle process debt, find someone who's business/UX/UI type, right? So high people, high, how are they going to do this? Like, what are the people going to do? And then find someone with deep tech knowledge, and you could do some magical things. Like, I worked with the Salesforce engineer at one point, and I would have this wild hair. Like, we saw this one problem where the clients would say thank you, and it would reopen their tickets, like, just by saying thank you. So I was like, hey, it'd be really cool if you could just check for, like, thank you. And if it was thank you, just don't reopen it.
I love it.
And they're like, I don't, that's a good idea, but that's going to be kind of hard, and I don't know. And then I woke up the next day and was like, I figured it out. And you're like, dude, you're awesome. But he would again, he was in the technical weeds, like, solving deep, gnarly technical problems, and no one would have come to him because they wouldn't have known that they were supposed to come to him.
Yeah. These experts are everywhere, but you've got to tease them out.
You got to find them.
I love it. All right, thank you, sir.
Yep. Catch you next week.
Have a good weekend.
Bye.